Hello, fellow realists. I'm David Ravel, and this is ValueSign for Friday, May 20th. For all of our articles and podcasts, visit valuesign.com. Well, today, the best indicator for the Ukraine war. Well, for many years, the best indicator for the fortunes of any country has been the relative value of their currency. And the international foreign exchange markets, the largest financial markets in the world, measure those relative values daily. Forex has become my go-to indicator throughout this current Russian incursion in Ukraine. And recently, the Forex markets have been telling a very different story than the one we see on our nightly newscasts. True, in the beginning of the conflict, the Russian ruble was extremely weak. And after war broke out at the end of February to the first week in March, the ruble, measured against the dollar, lost nearly half its value. In other words, it took twice as many rubles to buy a dollar as it did before the war. Foreign exchange markets were judging that the war was not going well for Russia. It looked like Russia was bogged down in an endless conflict, just exactly like the American press was telling us. But by mid-March, all that began to change, at least from the perspective of foreign exchange. The Russian ruble began to strengthen dramatically, and so did Russia's fortunes on the battlefield. This morning, after the full impact of Russia's victory in Mariupol is fully realized, the ruble has rallied to new highs, one-third higher than it was even before the war began. This is a very clear indication that foreign exchange believes that Russia is winning this war, and winning this war decisively. Now, in overnight economic news, Japan reports the highest inflation rate in 8 years as basic Japanese inflation hits 2.5%. And that's to be expected in today's worldwide inflation epidemic. What was not expected was the drop in German inflation at the producer or wholesale level. For the month of April, German producer prices came in at just 2.8%. 2 full points lower than the month before. But before we get too excited, German producer prices are still a third higher this year than last. So let's watch this indicator for the next month and see if maybe a trend is beginning. Now, later this afternoon, Baker Hughes will report on the number of oil rigs working in the U.S. Right now, operational oil rigs stand at 563. And we are adding 5 or 6 new rigs per month. But just remember, in 2019, there were nearly 900 operating oil rigs as America shot to number one in oil production worldwide. Now, a very light day for earnings today. Leading off has been everybody's favorite farm tractor, John Deere and Company. Preliminary indications, however, indicate that Deere will probably open lower. Also reporting this morning is Foot Locker, the athletic shoe store, expected to open higher this morning. Stay tuned now for today's market comment, selling ice cubes to Eskimos. Well, an interesting report hit my desk yesterday entitled Canada Raw Material Prices. Now, if there's one place on Earth that doesn't need raw materials, I thought, it's Canada. Do these people know anything about Canada? It's the world's second largest country, bounded by the United States on the south and 3 oceans, the Pacific, Atlantic, and Arctic oceans above it. Vast does not begin to describe Canada, with forests that stretch from here to forever, one of the largest oil reserves on Earth, and a leader in just about every industrial metal you'd care to name. From zinc to iron to uranium, Canada has it all. Well, it turned out that the report was from the Statistics of Canada, an agency of their government, so I guess they did know a thing or two about the country. My bad. But how is this possible? How is it that Canada, of all places, has to first import raw materials, and second, that it has to pay such an incredibly high price for those materials? Well, the second question is easier to answer than the first, so let me give you that. In the past 12 months alone, Canada's price for raw materials is up over 38%, and that's what really drew my eye. Worst still, Canada Statistics is cheering the fact that this latest month represents a reduction from the over 42% higher prices they were running the month before. And it was at this point that the light began to dawn. Why, these prices represent not just the prices of raw materials produced in Canada, but also the materials not produced in Canada, imported in other words. And it's here that things get a little tricky. So what if a foreign-owned company produces raw materials in Canada and then turns around and sells those products back to, say, a Canadian manufacturer? Are those foreign raw material sales or domestic? And it's not just an idle question. You see, traditionally, both the United States and Great Britain have invested heavily in Canada, with many American cars, for instance, produced up north. But recently, a third party has elected to join in, and that party is China. And China has a seemingly inexhaustible appetite for especially Canadian resource companies. For the past 20 years, China has bought as many small Canadian gold mines as they could get their hands on, also lumber companies, but most especially Canadian oil companies. In the past few years, China has purchased ADAX Petroleum, Petro-Kazakhstan, and CNOOC Petroleum, all major Canadian producers. So now we come to the question. If a Chinese oil company produces oil in Canada, is it foreign oil? The answer, I'm quite sure, is yes. China owned that oil and sold it back to Canada, so it's foreign oil. But the greater question, and the more important one, is who sets the price? And here, there can be absolutely no doubt. China, or at least those Chinese companies, set the prices. And when that salient point is fully grasped, you then understand why prices for raw materials in Canada have risen so much. It's not where those raw materials are located that counts, it's who sets the price. Yes, you can still sell ice cubes to Eskimos if you own the ice maker. And that's The Value Side for this Friday, May 20th. For all of our podcasts and blog posts, visit valueside.com. I'm David Revelle. Value Side is independently written and researched. The views expressed are strictly my own.